Legal disclaimer. Stamp Show here today, its affiliates and organizations are not responsible for any maiming, dismemberment, or physical injury from listening to this podcast. It is suggested that all listeners wear proper head protection and fasten all seat belts. Discontinue use if rash develops. Ask your physician if Stamp Show Here Today is right for you.
Live from the Stamp Show Here Today infotainment complex, this is the award-winning Stamp Show Here Today. If you can dream it, we can collect it. Brought to you by the Southern Nevada Philatelic Research Center, a nonprofit 501c3 corporation for the advancement of philately. You can support this witless tosh by joining the Stamp Show Here Today community. The cost is only $10 for a lifetime membership. We are an APS-affiliated club. Listen to the end credits for information on joining. This is Cash.
This is Mark.
This is Jim.
This is Scott.
And this is Dave.
Dave, why don't you go ahead and give yourself a shout out too, because you're a stamp dealer, like a real stamp dealer.
Oh, I don't know if I'm real or not. Dave Blackhurst, Sandy, Utah, and I love stamps.
Yep.
And you have the famous 30-cent.
Yes.
Which we have talked about many times.
Yeah, red boxes full of 30 cents.
And it's growing exponentially every week. It's amazing how many cheap stamps there are in this world.
Yeah. 99% of them.
Yes.
And so you have a team of Oompa Loompas that...
You know, I have one retired gentleman that is a processing animal.
Yeah.
He does 1,000 cards a week and just loves doing it.
Well, we got a letter via snail mail. To whom it may concern. Oh, by the way, last week we mentioned Joseph W. He wrote an email that said, "Hey Cal," you know, he called me Cal. He said that's because of autocorrect. He knows my name is Cash, but the autocorrect keeps changing it to Cal, and I sympathize. I can very easily see that as being true.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the letter. Whew. Whew. You guys make it hard to figure out how to join the club. I listen to the podcast and love it. You mentioned towards the end credits to join, and here I am. But I was looking online at Podbean, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, etc. on how to join. I'm kind of old-fashioned, so it was confusing to me that one has to send a check via snail mail. Yeah, I guess so. Just when they make me get used to links and paying online, you all throw me a curveball. I'd like to join the club anyway. Keep up the good work and keep them coming. Thank you very much. I need to see if we can do something. I know there's like buy me a cup of coffee and stuff like that is available on various things. So maybe I'll check something like that. So make it easier for him to ship us $10.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. He actually sent more than $10. He's treating us to lunch. So keeping with our new trend, we're going to talk about firearms stamps. Woke warning. We're going to be talking about gun control.
Yeah.
So if you don't like gun control, or you do like gun control and don't want a bunch of stamp collectors talking about it, you may want to skip ahead like 5 minutes or not send the $10 and say you guys are screwed. Get out of here, one or the other. But let's talk about firearm stamps and the firearm control law of 1934, right?
1934. Right, 1934. Yeah, they passed a bill to charge $200 if you want to own a machine gun or a
Gatling gun.
Yeah, a sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah, if you want to have a suppressor/silencer, not sure what the difference is between the two, but...
There is none.
Yeah, a suppressor or a silencer, machine gun, short-barreled rifle, short-barreled shotgun, or a destructive device. So you have to pay $200. Basically, it was because they wanted to discourage people from buying machine guns. So in 1934, you could buy a machine gun for $100. And so they said, well, let's create this tax stamp where you have to pay $200 to get the tax stamp in order to buy a machine gun. And because the price of the tax stamp is twice what the value of the gun is, we'll make those gun owners, you know, want to regret buying it. And so it's been $200 since 1934.
Which today would be how much?
Which is
$200.
No.
Yeah, with inflation, it'd be like $4,000, equivalent of $4,000. So the firearms transfer tax, you have to have one to buy one of these things as a suppressor or a machine gun. And so as I understand it, you have to buy it from a licensed gun dealer. The gun dealer fills out the paperwork. You have to submit a bunch of information, and then the gun dealer keeps it on his file for, I guess, a certain amount of time. But the problem with the firearms transfer tax is that gun dealers are zealots about keeping people's information secure and away from the government as much as possible. So they typically shred. Once they no longer have to keep the information, they typically shred them all. So it's really difficult to get a firearms transfer tax stamp. Sometimes they'll cut it off the license, and you can get them that way. But most of the time you can't. So the firearms transfer tax stamps that we do get in circulation are most often from California, because you've got the Hollywood people. You know, when they for their films and stuff, they'll buy machine guns and they'll buy silencers and stuff like that.
I've never seen a machine gun in a movie. every time they transfer it from storage to a movie set and then from the movie set back to the storage, they have to file one of these forms.
No, technically not, but every time they transfer it from the warehouse, if they are filming for a production company that isn't on site.
Well, on site's different, but the armorer on the movie set actually takes possession.
Yeah.
And so if it's like the machine gun's owned by the production company, they can't give it to an employee. They have to transfer it to the armorer, because typically the armorer is not an employee of the production company. So therefore they have to transfer it.
Well, when you see the licenses, and we come from Southern California. I actually know
Communist.
I know. there were ways around it, but there are also big bills that some of the production companies had to pay for machine guns. If they were coming into the film site from outside and didn't have an office there. So, like, if you go to Universal Studios, De Laurentiis Filming, which I think they declared bankruptcy, but De Laurentiis was doing a lot of, like, the Godfather stuff. And so when you see a machine gun, you know, when, what is it, Sonny? No. Is it Sonny that drives up to
Sonny, yeah. Yep.
And they machine gun his car?
Yeah.
They didn't have to pay the tax stamp on that. But when they did Saving Private Ryan, they did, because it was off-site. So there's these weird things that are going on with, it depends on who owns the gun and where they're filming and who they're giving it to. But you're right, because all these movies have literally a guy who's an armorer. He's in charge of the guns, and that's the one where the guy who accidentally shot the person on set.
Baldwin.
Eric Baldwin.
Not Eric.
Alec.
Okay. One of the Baldwin brothers. That armorer got in all sorts of trouble. But, you know, these are people who have actual jobs at these movie sites who are in charge of the guns. And so, I don't know, have you ever seen tax stamp that wasn't from a movie theater?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a couple of firearms transfer tax that were private individuals and it indeed has, you know, very, very, you know, sensitive information. It's got their name, address, it's got the type of armament that they purchased, you know, and that type of thing. So it's kind of rare to get them on license, and that's why they're so valuable. Yeah. But yeah, they're out there.
I have two of them on license with that information on, but I had never before this last show we went to seen one where it was actually on a form that had the picture of the purchaser. And it was a completed form, I suspect.
Normally, when you find the forms, not only is the picture removed, but a lot of times the personal information.
Right.
And it is rare to find on the form, but when you do, like I said, that information is usually removed to protect the purchaser.
Yeah, and it could be that that person was deceased or something. I don't know, but they were the modern stamps. I'd like to go back just a second on the history of this act in 1934. When Thompson developed his submachine gun, he developed it for World War I, for trench warfare. And by the time they got it into production, the war was over. So they had all these guns that they had produced and no market for them. So they started selling them in the United States. And I've seen ads, you know what the ads in the 20s and 30s looked like in the magazines, you know, with drawings of somebody with a gun. And they were selling them to farmers for varmint control.
Yeah,
machine gun your varmints.
Yeah, there's a mole rat.
Yeah. And I think the price back in the 20s was like $7.95 for the machine gun. So obviously by the time we got to the 30s, the gangsters were using these guns all the time. And so the government came up with this tax act to try to curtail the lawful sales, anyway, of the weapon.
Yeah, because the criminals, we know, they always follow the gun laws.
Yeah, that's...
Well, actually, that's the reason. Back then, they had a different interpretation of gun rights.
Yeah.
You know, they literally looked at the amendment in the Constitution and said, they have the right to bear arms. It says it right there.
Yeah.
It wasn't until much later that somebody said, no, it doesn't actually say that. What they actually, they put down those words, but what they meant was this.
Well, so without getting into the Second Amendment itself. Well,
I'm trying to avoid that. But what they did was they said, we can control guns. We can do gun control by just putting a heavy tax on it. We can't stop people from buying them, but we can make it punitively expensive.
Well, so fast forward to today, these stamps are very, very hard to find.
The early ones are extremely
hard. Well, the early ones are really hard to find.
Yeah.
They're the issues that we have now that we see most often are the last two issues, in 1990 and 2000, they issued a couple, and then there's one that's somewhere between 2012 and 2014. There's a couple other variants of it. But I've seen these on cut squares, I guess, you know, document. They've cut them off the document. But you basically can only get them used. They do not sell the stamps unused to anybody. So a collector can't get those. They sell them only to licensed dealers to put on the thing, and I don't know whether they give them a stock of those or not. We were talking about this earlier, and there are mint copies out there that have gone through the system somehow.
My guess would be somebody approached a gun dealer and said, "I'll pay the tax, just give me the stamp."
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one story I heard is that that some of these stamps were in mint condition, were given to people who worked for ATF as a retirement kind of a thing, and those have found their way to stamp dealers like Richard Friedberg.
Well, actually,
I bought a newer mint.
Now you just have to find the machine gun.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. No, the issues from the 1940s and 1950s, I forget. Oh, what year was the... It's somewhere around 40s and 50s. What year is that from?
Well, there's... Hold on. There's a stamp issued in 1939, and then the next one was 1960.
In the 1939 one. That was in the deaccession of the Smithsonian.
Oh, okay.
So
that would explain why the catalog value of it is lower than the others.
Yeah, what's the catalog value on it?
85 mint, 35 used.
Yeah. And the reason why it's 35 used is because they were hand canceled. So you could get a Bic pen and write your name and date it, and it would be used, and it's impossible for us to authenticate it. It's like, you know, well, this wasn't 1970 Bic pen ink, and it's
you'd have to do analysis on it.
Yeah, but there would be no way to do any analysis on it. You're using a Bic pen. So,
but ink formulas have changed over the years.
So find a Bic pen from 1980. How hard is that? It's like not hard at all.
No. They'll be dried up. They won't ever work.
No. That's one of the things is that a used stamp is worthless, and a mint stamp, because there's no way to authenticate it. So you're just taking an $85 stamp and turning it into a $35 stamp. Have a nice day.
Now, the interesting thing about these is that they are still issued.
Yes.
Despite being in the digital age, they're issuing these stamps. And the reason I think they do that is because the program lobby, you know, has obviously prevented Congress from raising the price from $200. But they haven't been able to prevent the use of the stamp. So it's still a burden in that there is a physical stamp that has to be stuck on a physical document and, you know, and signed. So that burden still remains as a small obstacle toward getting your silencer or getting your machine gun.
Well, it's more than that. It's exactly the same as the marijuana stamp. You have a machine gun. I arrest you. You say it's not my machine gun. I don't know where it came from. You know, somebody just stuck it in my car, whatever. If I'm a federal person, I go, I don't care whose machine gun it is. I don't care. Don't care about anything. But I have such an easy case against you because it doesn't have a tax stamp on it. I don't have to prove anything except, did you pay your $200? And if you can't generate a check or whatever, you're guilty. I can throw you in jail. Again, Al Capone wasn't arrested for murder. He was arrested for tax evasion. That's how they do it. This gives them a tool because, I mean, unless, you know, you're a gangbanger and you actually fill out the form and pay the tax stamp, which nobody's going to, you know, they have a really good tool to arrest you, which you could fight so much, you know, whether or not you own a machine gun. There's no way to fight whether or not you paid the tax. And so it's a way for the government to control stuff. It's a way of gun control.
So I have a couple questions. What's the market value? Do they sell at Scott Value, or they, when you find them, are you willing to pay?
Oh, I pay. I pay over Scott Value for
almost always.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then is it just specific dealers that can sell a machine gun, or can any gun dealer sell a machine gun?
Well, as long as they have
the right license.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, they have to have a right license to sell a machine gun versus...
Well, sure, they're licensed by the government.
I'm not a licensed gun dealer, so I don't know what kind of licensing requirements they have. But I would suspect that there may be different types of licenses for different types of guns. One general one to maybe sell shotguns, rifles, and handguns, but a specialized one if you're going to sell machine guns and some of these other things that have other requirements.
Yeah,
because they probably require training on how to fill out the form too, which they'll charge you for.
I was going to say that just about every gun store or gun range that I've ever visited has automatic weapons.
Well, the gun ranges around here absolutely have those.
And so they obviously have to have these stamps on file somewhere.
Because the owner the dealer who sold it.
The dealer who has got the... has the gun for rental.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
But yeah, but the owner can get a copy of, sure. of the, they just can't have the original. Mm. They can't keep the original. Yeah.
But your proof is that you have the receipt that says I paid.
Paid it, yeah.
Yeah, the guns have VIN numbers. They track right. guns. They are numbered.
Well, and the stamps are numbered.
And the stamps are numbered, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if suppressors have serial numbers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Wouldn't Moms. Surprise me.
Yeah.
Moms don't have serial numbers.
Yeah.
And they are all pen canceled, every single one. Is that true?
Everyone that I have all seen. The late,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know how a dealer would do it otherwise. He won't have a ball dater to sit
yeah,
there.
The current ones,
maybe he does.
The current ones are pen canceled.
Honestly, I have not seen earlier, it isn't.
The earlier issues back in the before 2000, they had a printed number on them.
Right. Yeah, the newer ones don't have a printed
so
number.
You, so you find them both number. Ways in the marketplace. It's stamp, you know, dealers and stamp shows or whatever that have these.
Yeah, and the newer stamps are self-adhesive. So that's one of the things that they've changed over time is that they've gone from gum activated to self-adhesive.
So, Scott, what crossed your desk this week?
I had a genuine missionary cover.
Oh, ooh. Wow.
Yes.
That's impressive. Was it on the really thin, crappy paper?
It was a folded letter sheet, multiple pages, and the stamp was partially torn off.
Normal.
Because that's what they did as a receipt. Early on, and so it's an earlier usage, and I just thought it was really kind of cool, and the whole letter's there to read. So,
no other stamp on the cover.
Yeah.
Was it a local use?
No, it had a San Francisco CDS on the cover as well.
So it had a 13-cent stamp on it. Probably.
It had a 13-cent stamp.
Yeah.
Did they write about the weather?
No.
So, Dave, what crossed your desk?
You know, I bought a collection of possessions and had a lot of the Cuba overprints that I've been spending some time on and trying to figure out.
Yes.
Oh, the Cuba, yes.
The provincials.
You're talking about what's the name of the?
The ones you can't sell on eBay.
Yeah. You can't sell any of them. No. What's the city that they were came out of? Principe something.
Puerto Principe.
Puerto Principe.
Yeah, Puerto.
Yeah. And those are...
They can get pricey.
Yes, but they have been so extensively counterfeited. Just incredible. Yeah. And
from an expertizing point of view... the only way to expertise them is to actually match them up and plate them. They're like kind of like 1 cent Franklins. You can plate them. The different settings are all known, and there's literature to help you plate them. But that is the way you authenticate them. And again, like Cash said, they are extensively counterfeited.
But the counterfeits are very good.
The counterfeits are
very good. So without plating.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Hawaiian numerals. Sometimes sometimes you can tell right away because there's obvious tells. But other times, I mean, you have to sit there and try and plate it before you can actually tell that it's not plateable.
Yeah.
And if you can't plate it, it ain't real.
Nah. That's the way the expertising world works.
Same thing with Switzerland, early Switzerland. If you can't plate it, it ain't real. So, Jim, we'll cross your desk.
Well, I had a St. Louis Bears cover.
Well, that's on my bucket list.
11X2, which is the 10-cent black on greenish. And it catalogs on cover, $14,000.
Oh, that's not much.
Yeah, not bad. But anyway, it was very, very interesting to see something of that notoriety, I guess.
Yeah.
They're famous. And, I mean, I knew about St. Louis Bear stamps when I was a Boy Scout collecting stamps. You know, that's just one of those things you learn about. So it was very nice. It was genuinely used on the cover. And I think it's probably going to get a good cert.
Good. Mark, we'll cross your desk.
Well, I had a 454 line pair, which is the rotary press, which typically rotary press pairs or rotary press stamps, you know, you don't they're not really faked. So, you know, you often don't give it a second thought. But this particular line pair, the line was drawn in with a very convincing red pen. And they're very careful not to make it obvious, like, you know, really pressing down on the paper so that you could see an obvious, you know, ink blot on each perf hole. But yeah, it was fake. So they not as, you know, not as valuable as the St. Louis Bear or the Hawaiian numerals, but yeah, so this little lowly, rotary press, coil was a fake line pair. Yeah,
trying to turn a $20 item into a $50 item.
Right.
Yeah, and that one there, the reason that it's different is that on the flat plate stamps, the line is printed. So it'll be consistent, like that drawing.
Yeah, guideline,
is.
Yeah.
On the rotary press, though, they curled the plates,
mm-hmm.
and then they matched them up, and then they stuck them to a rotor and printed a bunch of stuff. So the line is actually where two plates meet each other.
Yeah.
So it's actually produced by sort of a gap or, you know, where it could not be matched up perfectly. So you have this residue line where residue ink collects between the two plates. And Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but generally speaking, it isn't like really nice and even. Whereas this line was drawn in was pretty nice and even.
Well, it varies. I mean, over time, the ink builds up in that small crevice, and it prints just as if it was engraved. So when the plates get wiped as they rotate, that ink, those crevices are much deeper than the engraved lines on the plates, and so you don't get as clean of a wipe, and so yeah, they kind of get messy. They start out kind of neat because they're clean, and over time it builds up and they can become quite messy and irregular.
A clean wipe.
Yeah,
that's I'm not going to make any joke there.
Yeah.
But right. I could.
That's a brand name, actually, for diaper wipes.
Clean wipe. A baby wipes. Yep. You know? Clean baby wipes. Well, if there's nothing else, then happy collecting.
We need your help. Nothing on the internet is free, including our phone and internet connections. So you can support the podcast by joining the Stamp Show Here Today Club. The cost is $10 for a lifetime membership. Please include your APS member number, as we are an APS-affiliated club. Your support is greatly appreciated. Our brand new spanking address is 5965 Harrison Drive, Suite 6 in Las Vegas, Nevada, 89120.
You left out the word glorious.
Fabulous.
Because you don't put that on the letter.
Oh. Well, you could.
You could, yeah.
You could, yeah.
Well, kids, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank Sideshow Mel, Corporal Punishment, Tina Ballerina, Owen from Knot's Landing, Miss Donna Mills. Oh, she was a sport. We've had lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fun, but now the time has come to go. If this silkworm was found dead in his bed tomorrow, I'd be in heaven still doing this show. See you some other time!
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.